This article appeared in the fall 2019 issue of UU World magazine. LGBTQ people have always been part of U.S. history. Author Michael Bronski on Adapting a Queer History for Younger Audiences by Christian Coleman. Even though some states have recently passed legislation requiring inclusive curricula in public schools, many LGBTQ students still grow up without ever seeing themselves reflected in textbooks and history lessons. According to a 2017 report by GLSEN Gelson, less than 20% of LGBTQ students in the United States are taught positive representations of queer people or queer history in their schools. That's where Michael Bronski's A Queer History of the United States for Young People comes in. Adapted by Richie Shavat, the book shows that queer people have long been vital to shaping our understanding of what America is today. Beacon Broadside editor Christian Coleman caught up with Bronski to ask about the inspiration behind the book, what's new in this edition, and more. This is a dialogue. Coleman, how did the idea of publishing a young adult vision edition of A Queer History of the United States come about? Bronski, my editor, Gayatri Patniak, and I learned that teachers were looking for resources, and Gayatri suggested we answer their call with a young readers edition. With support from the Fund for Unitarian Universalist Social Responsibility, Beacon Press, and senior editor Joanna Green reached out to educators, librarians, and adapters who generously and enthusiastically collaborated on this effort. At the moment, Beacon is releasing my book, A Queer History of the United States for Young People, as well as Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz's An Indigenous People's History of the United States for Young People. There has been, in the last 5 years or so, a surge in YA nonfiction publishing, with a push for more LGBTQ-inclusive curriculum in the classroom, which is now mandated by law in California and New Jersey, and the 50th anniversary of Stonewall now felt like the perfect time. Coleman, who are some of your favorite historical figures you've written about? Bronski, one of my favorite people in the world is Charlotte Cushman, who was one of the most famous and critically acclaimed actors of the 19th century. She lived a very public life with a series of women partners who were accepting and accepted as her spouses. Elizabeth Barrett Browning, one of the leading British poets of the time, said that Cushman and Matilda Hayes made vows of celibacy and of eternal attachment to each other. They live together, dress alike. It is a female marriage. Although we know from Cushman's letters that they were certainly not celibate, Cushman played many roles but was famous for playing male parts and was celebrated for playing Romeo to her sister Susan's Juliet. Very few historians have written about a late 18th century popular evangelist who, named Jemima Wilkinson at birth, became public universal friend after a mystical religious experience. Friend disavowed any and all gender, dressing in robes that were not gender-specific, and preached a gospel of love, acceptance, and universal salvation that was tempered with apocalyptic visions of the end times and a mandate that followers abstain from sex. I discovered Friend's name mentioned in passing in an essay on religion in colonial America and became intrigued. At that time, only one scholarly essay existed on Friend. This was amazing, as Friend was a popular religious figure with a large following who started a religious commune in Upper New York State, which peacefully coexisted with the indigenous people of the area. It is amazing to see that Friend, as well as many others, had such a broad understanding of gender that was at odds with the beliefs of the day. Part of the joy in writing the book was uncovering and introducing to readers, young and older, these people who have been lost in contemporary retellings of U.S. history. Coleman, what about the project excited you? Bronski, I think what excited me most about the project was having the time, space, and support to really think about and consider not what a book like this might mean to young people today, but what these readers will bring to the book. I started teaching late in life, at age 50, and at the college level, but over those 20 years, I have seen tremendous changes in my students. They are not only enormously politically active in LGBTQ issues, but have a deep and growing fluency in the cultural and social changes happening around gender and sexuality. Their embrace of the proliferation of gender and sexual identities was astounding to me, even as someone who has been doing this political work since 1969. Much of the book has been shaped by what I have learned and continue to learn from my students. I am sure we will be doing revisions in future printings. One of my hopes is that the book will be as useful to parents and educators in introducing them to LGBTQ history, but also to the newer understandings of sexual and gender identity that younger people are experiencing and living today. The world has changed tremendously in the last decade and will change even more in the next. Thinking of writing a book that will be part of those changes was challenging and fulfilling. Coleman, what are some examples of changes made from or added to the original publication? Bronski, the most major change in the YA version is that I take the history up to the present. A queer history of the United States essentially ended in 1992 with a nod to the activism, much of which revolved around anti-discrimination issues, that had happened since then. The YA book includes people and events that are still in today's headlines. I think that is why young people will not only connect to it more easily, but also discuss issues that they see every day in their lives. I write about Aiden DeStefano's lawsuit against his high school for not allowing trans-inclusive locker rooms. He won the first round of the suit, and he recently won an appeal. The format of the YA book is very different than the adult book, and I break the story down to 34 short chapters that focus on individuals or themes. The sweep of 500 years is now more personalized through a series of short, detailed portraits and vignettes. It's a different way of telling history and gave me more freedom to explore the lives of these incredible people, such as Deborah Sampson, Albert Cashier, Victoria Woodhull, Christine Jorgensen, Bayard Rustin, and Marsha P. Johnson, many of whom only got a sentence or two in the original book. Coleman, were there any challenges with adapting the text for a younger readership? Bronski, the main challenge was that a YA book is completely different from an adult book, and we were enormously helped and guided by Richie Chavat, listed as the adapter, who has written and adapted numerous books for young people before. The main challenge was to tell the entire story through the lens of smaller stories, and to always keep in mind that each piece of the mosaic had to tell an important part of the larger story. This is not a cleaned-up or sanitized version of LGBTQ history for kids. All of the individuals in the book are presented as complicated and complex people who have faults, serious problems, and at times make flawed decisions. Young people today are sophisticated and intelligent enough to know that people, even heroic people who change the world, are complicated. Coleman, what would you like for educators and kids to take away from the book, especially now with the news of Martha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera getting statues made in their honor? Bronski, I think there is an easy lesson to take away from A Queer History of the United States for Young People. LGBTQ people have always been a part of U.S. history. They helped shape it, move it forward, and are integral to today. They are not separate from U.S. history, but part of it. This is slowly changing, and we now see historians considering how the sexual identity of a historical figure may have played a part in their lives. Also, we as a culture are coming to a better understanding of what is important in our history. Just recently, New York City announced that it was going to erect a memorial to Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, two members of New York's Gay Liberation Front, the first queer activist group formed after Stonewall, who founded Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, STAR. This is great and should be applauded, but we also need to remember and teach their lives in the full tapestry of U.S. history and how important they were in shaping and improving the lives of so many people in their time and later. This article was written by Christian Coleman, an associate digital marketing manager for Beacon Place and the editor of Beacon Broadside blog, beaconbroadside.com. And this is a service provided by the Unitarian Universalist Association, UU World, and Equal Access. This article was read by Don Heimel of DPH Vocalese, a member of First UU Church of San Antonio, Texas.